Outwardly, I was everything a well-brought-up girl should be. Inside, I was screaming. These are the immortal words of Kate Winslet's character Rose in the classic movie Titanic. For decades, I lived those words. That's why in this episode, we're talking about from silent to speaking up, how to say what's on your mind without giving them a piece of your mind. Welcome to the Broadroom. Joe, I want to start with your trip to the hairdressers just recently, where we've mentioned about this before, where you wanted like a bouncy blow dry. and what was it that you came out the hairdressers with?
Really straight hair, like I normally do it, because yeah, you're right. There are some occasions where, and it sounds ridiculous, having had this like corporate career right to the top, I sit in the hairdressers and all I wanted was a bouncy blow dry. And I just felt I couldn't say it. I really felt I couldn't say it. So in my head, I mean, he did an amazing job and he's such a nice guy as well. He cut my hair. But the previous time I've been to the hairdressers, he'd cut my hair and somebody else was doing the blow dry. And she said to me, do you want a bouncy blow dry? And so I said, yes, please. But this time he didn't ask me. And all the time he got the hair dryer and he was drying my hair. The whole time in my head I was saying, ask for a bouncy blow dry, ask for a bouncy blow dry. And the words, I could not get them out of my mouth because I kept thinking, he's going to think that I'm criticising him and it's really cheeky. So I came out and then it was awful because, you know, when they do the mirror bit at the end and they show you and he was ever so chuffed, look how shiny and glossy and straight your hair is. And I just went, yeah, thank you. It's lovely and straight, thank you. And do you know what I nearly did? I mean, this is ridiculous. I came out and there's a couple of doors down. There was another hairdresser and I nearly walked straight in there and asked them to wash and blow dry my hair and pay for it again. I didn't. But it's ridiculous, isn't it, sometimes, where you just don't feel like you can speak up.
Yeah, it is insane. And, you know, we talked about it because I said, like, when you mentioned about it, I was like, I absolutely hear you. Because I know at the time, I think I saw a photograph or you were on Insta with your beautifully straight, glossy hair, which looked amazing. So, like you say, it was nothing to do with the job that you did, but it wasn't what you wanted. And yeah, I've been exactly that person in personal situations and work situations. And we have a guide. We have a guide with every podcast that we do. And we have an acronym of Broads that we always work to for those guides. And it's brilliant, actually, because the S in this particular guide is for what I would call like smiling and laughing. Which is that thing where you're like, lovely. That we do, particularly when we feel awkward or embarrassed. So that's in the downloadable guide with this episode. But you know, we said at the time, like we've both done it in all sorts of circumstances, haven't we? Where we've just agreed, we've been completely agreeable for fear of being disagreeable.
Yes, and also I think in a work context, for me, some of that, you know, remaining silent and not speaking up, you know, I've had, well, actually amazing ideas, but in my brain, it was like, oh no, don't say it out loud. What if you get shot down? What if you look like an idiot? What if everyone laughs at you? What if they say, don't be so ridiculous? So I've kept really quiet and not spoken up. Then somebody has shared an idea where I've kind of thought, I mean, this is naughty, isn't it? I've kind of thought, well, that's rubbish. And then they've got plaudits for it. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, my idea was better. Why didn't you just say it? You know, and then you beat yourself up about that as well. Or you might have, you know, I remember this back at school, you know, put your hands up if you know the answer. And of course I would know the answer, but I would never put my hand up.
Oh, yeah.
Again, in fear of getting it wrong and everyone laughing. And then other people would take ages. They'd put their hands up and then they'd go, oh, well done, you're really smart. And I'd be thinking, I didn't know the answer, but I didn't want to put my hand up.
Yeah, and then you're kicking yourself, aren't you? And I think as well, in that work context, the other one as well, when you, like you say, you have somebody whose idea is like a bit rubbish versus yours, but then also those people who repurpose your idea. So you say your idea, it doesn't seem to get a lot of like warmth or traction. And then 10 minutes later, somebody says exactly your idea, but in a slightly different way. And then everyone goes, oh, yeah, yeah, great, great idea. That is the one that used to really, really grind my gears.
I know, but sometimes they don't even repurpose it, do they? They just claim it.
Yeah.
They claim it. I mean, what do you do then? I mean, that one happens so many times. And there are lots of women that I work with, actually, and it frustrates them that, you know, or a piece of work that they've done and somebody else has claimed the credit for it. And they're like, it's my work and I don't know what to say. And because we feel really uncomfortable. I think this comes to your O, actually, in the guide, doesn't it? Some of that is other people's bad behaviour. And how do you object to it? You know, how do you do it without feeling really bad yourself? Because sometimes, you know, and challenge that.
Yeah, it is really hard because you know, you don't want to seem disagreeable. And, you know, I think we do, particularly as women, have a fear of a sort of, we're high maintenance. And a bit difficult. Whereas actually, what you observe, if you actually observe, I'd say the guys in the room or those with more masculine traits, because that could be a woman with more masculine traits, they're much more blunt.
Yeah.
Like, and they just sort of do that and then they get away with it and we're okay with that. And I think it is a tricky one for women because we do have this thing of, you know, I don't want to be seen to be like, you know, have a bit of an attitude and stuff. But you know, the O in the guide is about, you know, when you get interrupted, when you get spoken over, when your ideas get stolen, of, you know, really just to encourage women and go, it's okay to say that that's not okay. You know, you don't have to be arsey. And again, that's one of the that's the R in my guide in terms of like how to respond rather than react. So no doubt we'll talk about that too. But, you know, this idea of it is actually okay to speak up and go, hang on a minute, you know, that was my idea, you know, I said that 10 minutes ago, or, you know, that's my piece of work, or, you know, or to re, you know, to say it in such a way that says, well, yeah, you know, as I was saying previously, you know, and then to repeat your original words and your original idea. Because I think, you know, we do have to learn to sort of you know, just to step up and kind of do that, the Sheryl Sandberg thing of leaning in and actually going, no, this is me, this is my idea. Because, you know, we have another episode, don't we, where we talk about from critic to cheerleader. You know, you do have to be your own biggest cheerleader, because the reality is somebody else is not going to do that for you.
No. And there's a lot of work we do inside the boardroom on that. So, and there's another episode, you know, how to do your own PR without feeling icky about it, or, you know, shine in the spotlight without feeling like a horrible show off. You know, it's that kind of thing. And I guess to have some stock phrases around that usually can be helpful. And it's trying to get that balance, isn't it? Because, you know, I always feel like, and I don't know whether there's truth in it or whether, again, it's just my inner critic with this. If I were to say some of the things that you've just said, oh, she's just being like difficult now, you know. Oh, well, that was my idea. And, you know, I wonder if there are, you know, I try and soften it always. And maybe this is me still being silent about it. Like, I love how you've built on my idea there.
Yeah, some of those are great, because again, one of the other things that I say, you know, in that we've got in the guide is like, whatever you do, though, don't apologize. Because an apology completely undermines you. So whether you have an apology at the front and go, sorry, but da 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 da, because I used to be the queen of sorry. And I still do it a bit, but I used to be sorry, sorry, sorry with everything. So whether you say sorry up front, because straight away that disempowers you, or there's a sorry or an apology somewhere in the statement or somewhere towards the end, you know, like you say, having phrases that reframe it, or, you know, that's brilliant that you've built on my idea, or whatever those are. But absolutely, I think my golden rule is don't put an apology in there. Don't apologize for pointing out that somebody else is being a bit of a twat.
I want to pick up on this thing about, you know, you saying sorry and it disempowers you. So how do you actually step into your power? What is your power as well?
Yeah, well, I think it's that thing, isn't it? And again, you know, we have a whole episode, don't we, on sort of like from feeling small to standing tall, because I think it is that thing where, you know, I love your thing. You have the golden thread thing, don't you, where you sort of pull yourself up to your full height. You know, we've talked about the superhero pose and things like that. But I think stepping into your power is really probably the it aligns really well with the B in our guide for this particular episode, which is about begin with you. Because you need to know who you are. You need to know what it is that you stand for. And sometimes I think we really need to remind ourselves of that, because we get shaped and we get worn down. And, you know, we sometimes maybe just sit inside our comfort zone a little bit, you know, all sort of gets a bit sort of warm and fluffy. And we dim ourselves down, you know, we dial back who we are. And if you begin with you and go, who are you? Like, who actually are you? And remind ourselves about, you know, what you stand for, what your values are, the things that do, as I say, you know, grind your gears and wind you up. And, you know, that you actually really think, hang on a minute, I don't want to stand for that anymore. You know, and you and I are so passionate, aren't we, about like, who is it you're role modeling for? You know, what do you want to present that's actually a role model for somebody else that you would want them to observe and go, yeah, actually, that's how I want to behave. That's who I want to be. And if we become really clear about who that person is, then, as I always say, you know, you can stand on your little square of the world, and then, as you would have, like, have, and then have that golden thread that pulls you up through your spine and through the top of your head, that makes you stand tall, even if you're not actually literally physically tall. Stand tall. Yeah. And, you know, and do that. And I think if you're really clear, then that allows you to sort of set some boundaries, you know. And I know we talked about that in another episode, but like becoming really certain about what you want to stand for, that helps to shape your identity. And that for me is about stepping into your power. You know, you don't have to be like, you know, badass or kick ass or any of those things. You just need to know who you are. And then if once you know that, you can stand into that with a relative amount of confidence and some real certainty, and think, I now know what, like, you know, what my parameters are, what my standards are, what my boundaries are, whatever terminology you want to use for that. And therefore you will know when somebody has breached those, because that's the power of knowing what you stand for and who you are, is that you know when people cut across those values and those standards.
And I love it, because we covered it in another episode, but the role modelling thing, that if you can't, maybe to begin with, do it for yourself, think about who you're role modelling for. Maybe that's your daughter or a niece or grandchild or whoever that is. Because I think in From Critic to Cheerleader, we talk about that quite a lot. And you mentioned your young niece at 4 years old repeating some of the things that you say, that you said about yourself, that are really unkind, you know. So role modeling, even acting as if, I think that's quite a nice technique sometimes, you know, the things that you want to be, if you act as if you are them, they, you suddenly become them. But there's also, I think, some of the language we don't think about at times, where we hear ourselves dumb ourselves down. So whether that is, as you said, the laughter padding thing, you know, or, you know, these phrases like, oh, I'm having a blonde moment.
Oh, I know.
You know, I never hear guys say, I'm having a bald moment, and good for them, you know.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's the way we should be, more like the men.
I mean, good for them. They don't, you know, their appearance with things like that. And I know these are sort of words, phrases that have had an association with things way back, and we still are using them to this day, and we're saying it about ourselves. I'm having a blonde moment. And, you know, why are we still associating with, you know, having blonde hair with not being particularly bright or being forgetful. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And if I have blonde hair, I'm a brunette and you're a redhead, I'd be just shaking my locks, you know, everywhere. So, yeah, I think that's really interesting that we can, without realising it, dumb ourselves down in situations through the things we say, the way we hold ourselves, the things like, and the ones that I always used to find, and maybe we'll come on to how do you respond without reacting. I don't know whether you've experienced this too, but it would be in meetings, say I was the only female in a meeting, the eyes would look at me to take minutes or points, or they would blatantly say, Jo, will you be mum? And pour the tea and cup. And all I wanted to say, and a lot of times they, what did your last slave die of? And then she's being the difficult woman again.
Yeah, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, because the taking minutes thing, I mean, I really learned during my career to absolutely kind of sit on my hands when it came to like, who's taking the notes? You know, you're like, it's not me. And I used to literally like just like look around the room or not make eye contact with anybody in the end, because I was like, no, I'm not being that woman. But yeah, I was having the conversation with somebody the other day where, you know, we were saying that towards the latter end of our corporate careers, which is probably now why I work for myself, I would be much more you know, in your face about that. You know, I have been known to say things like, is that because you think a vagina writes better than a penis? I have been known to say that, because I just think it's just, you know, one of my other ones, maybe like slightly less offensive, because they always used to like try and get me to, you know, write on the flip chart, whatever, which I have to say, I kind of love a flip chart.
I do too.
A flip chart. Yeah. But, you know, there would be that, you know, again, that who's, because again, the assumption being that if you're the one that's written the notes, you're then going to rip down those flip charts and bloody type them up afterwards. That's the other thing. So you have to be really careful. And before now, like people, oh, Carolyn, you've got really nice writing.
I know.
So you do it. And like my response to that used to be, I therefore don't need the practice. Why don't we choose somebody that could do with the handwriting practice?
Nice.
And I used to say that to people as well, because that, yeah, used to frustrate the hell out of me.
I mean, for me, I was never quite, you know, I either had the whole, what did your last slave die of, that never got me very far. Or what I learned to do, which I don't know whether it's I'll present it as, okay, I'll do it this time, but let's get a rota for the next one. So let's agree now who's going to take for each meeting, you know, the minutes, the action points, or when it's, I mean, I love a flip chart and that's why I do what I do, you know, facilitating stuff, and I'll do a flip chart, like my handwriting's appalling. I'll take photographs of it, or I'll get the others to take photographs. So there's the flip chart. I'm not going to now spend a lot of time typing all that up. Go and take your photos of it, and then it's up to you to action, you know. But okay, so this whole how do we respond rather than react?
Because your point is exactly, you know, and obviously my whole kind of vagina versus penis comment, you know, obviously is indicative of the fact that very much my frustration can get the better of me. And you know, I talk about this in the guide as well, you know, because we've talked about it before, haven't we, of my frustration levels, you know, I'd stay silent, but actually underneath it, I'd be starting to simmer, and then it would turn into a bit of a boil. And then it would quite often, like, you know, come out, not like in a shouty way, but my frustrations would spill over. And I probably was a bit arsy and, you know, sarcastic and, you know, all those things that mean you don't turn up as the best version of yourself, you know, and you lose, again, you lose your power because you've, you know, sort of come across and let your emotions like spill over. And I mean, this is where like you absolutely excel in terms of, you know, the kind of the Frankenstein brain and the Einstein brain, isn't it? Of, you know, the Frankenstein, again, like the monster, it kind of thrashes around, doesn't it? And it's very primitive, you know, and it sort of throws its weight around in a very uncoordinated way, which, you know, is there for a reason, isn't it? Because it's, you know, that's part of a brain that is kind of a bit of a blunt instrument. And sometimes if we were in actual sort of physical danger, then we'd probably need a bit of that. But then, you know, it's the Einstein bit, isn't it, that you need to let Einstein kind of show up and kick in, which is usually a bit slower and a bit further behind. But actually Einstein, as we know, way more intelligent and thoughtful, and therefore much more of our kind of intellectual friend in responding. But I mean, this is kind of, I'm trampling on your area of expertise here.
I'm really bad job of explaining. No, so well explained. Because really what we're doing, and it's a bit like that, I don't know if you've, I mean, my probably biggest one where I would react rather than respond would be on an email. So, right. You know, you would get an email and suddenly my Frankenstein brain went, what? And I would be typing so fast, hit send, and then go, why have I sent that?
Yeah.
You know, and then you're coming across in either this like moany, whiny, emotional, or I'm in fight mode. And the problem with that also is that sometimes those people have not, it's the only interaction they've had with me in weeks or months, and that's what they've seen. Now it's usually because they've had an inability to communicate well themselves. You know, I'll just send an email, because a lot of that stuff at work is, if I send an email, I've done the task tick, you know, nobody's bothered to have a conversation, and then it winds you up, and then you react rather than responding. So that's definitely Frankenstein brain in action, who's fast, automatic, and efficient. It's that part of the midbrain, ancient brain, that is there to save your life. I talk about that an awful lot. The life-saving gift, because, you know, your life is under threat. Well, it isn't when you get an email, quite frankly, most of the time, is it? We're not generally in those situations, but I want to fight, you know. I want to fight, and Frankenstein goes, right, okay, fight. He gets over-emotional. The fisties come out and suddenly they're on my keyboard and I've sent that, you know, that over-emotional message. So, and it's a common one, this, because I work with lots of people. And that is probably one of the most common things that triggers that kind of fight. Or I know for women that I'm working with who work on a board of men and feel like their voice can't be heard, like you, it simmers and it simmers, and then they'll press a button, because generally people know how to press your buttons in that world, don't they? And they'll press that button and you go boom. And for some of them, they've said to me, how can I come across as being professional without looking for, as if I'm looking for a fight?
Yeah, because for me, like quite often, particularly in the environments I worked in, because I was a lot in sort of manufacturing, construction, supply chain, like you know, very male environments. Yeah, for me, it would probably come out in an expletive. I'd probably, like, my Frankenstein would immediately verbalize it and go, fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, I probably didn't really do that in open meetings, but I generally... something hadn't gone well. I mean, the poor boss that I had at one point, I do remember going into his office saying that, F your job, you know, and he looked at me like, poor guy, and, you know, he was an ace boss, to be honest. He was an absolute ace boss. If you're listening, Adrian, you know I absolutely love you to pieces. He was an ace boss. But the poor guy, poor Adrian, sit there sometimes, because I was that frustrated with things, but I just could not calm that reaction quite, you know, lots of things that I actually didn't deserve, because maybe I'd experienced bullying behaviour or I hadn't listened to and they wouldn't let me speak. But it would simmer and do that. So then I would feel really bad about that. And then you beat yourself up, you know, oh gosh, why can't I control my emotions? And so really engaging Einstein genius is that front part of your brain. So the front part of your brain, it does all the things that are, you know, it's what you want. To have calmness, to be able to think clearly, be able to put your point across constructively and with calmness, be able to problem solve your way through something and communicate better. That's all Einstein, but it's front of the brain. And it gets tired really easily. So default when you're tired, because let's face it, in a corporate environment, and if you're also a parent and you're doing the school run, and before you've even got to work, if you have had to get the kids up, dressed, they're arguing, then you're navigating traffic, getting them off to, you know, to school. And then you sit at your desk And then you've got meeting after meeting and you're juggling. That front part of your brain, Einstein, is already knackered.
Yeah.
So when he's knackered, the default is Frankenstein because it's fast and efficient. And, it, you know, so any little thing then can become something that triggers that frustration, that emotion, and you get into fight mode. Or it might be, I'm going to run away from this now. It's so overwhelming that I can't, you know, I can't deal with it. So being able to actively recruit resources to the front of your brain, there are loads of like really just simple things that you can do, actually, neuroplasticity exercises to do it. I mean, I've got time to talk about them on today's podcast, but there are things that we will do inside our broad room events to help you just navigate all of that stuff and also help you strengthen that voice that you have.
Yeah.
Because when you grab hold of that critical voice, or that, you know, I can't say to the hairdresser, I don't get it right all the time. You know, I want a bouncy blow dry. But actually, if I'd engaged my Einstein brain while I was sat in the chair, that would have been fairly easy for me to do.
Yeah. And it's, yeah. And it's that thing. And I think the other thing that, you know, I want to just build on as well, because again, you know, you talked about, you know, stories and kind of about the lies that we tell ourselves and all those things, you know, we talk about that frequently, you know, because it comes into so many of the different topics that we cover on the podcast. And like you say, when we then get, you know, at the live events as well, but you know, this thing of these lies that we tell ourselves, these stories that we tell ourselves, but actually one of the ones in particular I wanted to pick up here is actually about shame, because for me personally, you know, my silence has actually had huge personal cost to me. So I, you know, and I talk about this in my other work, but, you know, I've been in a couple of abusive relationships and situations in my life, and that staying silent has absolutely been, you know, the hallmark of those situations. And a lot of that was based on shame, you know, not least in one of those, you know, I was a successful woman, you know, I had a well-paid job, I was a board director, you know, I kind of, you know, it looked like everything was great and fine and at work, you know, I was very strong and confident, but actually in the background, you know, I was then suffering emotional abuse, you know, some quite bad psychological abuse. And, you know, for me, again, it's about that, the silence there, you know, it had huge consequences for me, you know, physically, because it was making me ill, staying silent and dealing with that stuff. Yeah. But actually feeling from a place of shame, because I thought, well, this shouldn't be happening to me. You know, I should be able to deal with this. I should be able to speak up. You know, why am I letting this happen to me? Even that extent, because I was being massively sort of psychologically manipulated and suffering gaslighting. Is this happening to me? You know, or huge amounts of self-doubt. And I think, you know, that's why the D in our guide, you know, is about don't believe your own lies. You know, some of that's about, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves. And we've talked about this before, about, you know, those stories getting set, those beliefs about ourselves being set really early on in our life. But, you know, it's kind of even wider than that, you know, because we look for evidence, don't we, to support those lies rather than things to refute those lies. But actually, you know, for me, there was a lot of shame and a lot of like, you're failing because, you know, you're out here, you know, doing this amazing job and having some really difficult conversations and dealing with some difficult environments from a work point of view. But back home, a completely silent, complete kind of shrinking violet, not saying anything, not least because most of the time I was treading on eggshells.
And, you know, in, as you say, emotionally abusive relationships, you know, that, you know, as you talked about gaslighting can happen at work as well, can't it? This whole gaslighting where you then really start doubting yourself and your sanity, and it must be me and all that kind of things. And also I think, you know, because I say this a lot to delegates that I work with on training programs, leaders and people that I coach, that we bring our whole self to work. It doesn't just, you know, we open the door at work or on the laptop and suddenly all that stuff that's going on at home, we just were cut off and we're this different person. But the fact that you were able to achieve what you also achieved at work with all that going on that you were silent about, I guess to your partners, not talking up for yourself with your partners, but also not letting people in your world know about what was happening for you, that can be an incredible burden to be carrying, exhausting. And also maybe at some points, feeling like a bit of a fraud with, you know, how can I be this top executive doing all of this stuff and my life behind closed doors? Is, I know you've said it, like disastrous, you call it disastrous, don't you? I would say, gosh, what an incredibly brave, courageous woman that you are that's dealt with a lot, you know. But when you said that in your books, you said that, but my personal life was a disaster. How have you dealt with that? How have you sort of overcome that?
I think it's taken a long time, and there's a reason I wanted to, you know, raise it on it, because I know that with the Boardroom, you know, we laugh a lot, don't we, you know, but it's, I think it is really important that we do say that it's not all kind of like shits and giggles. You know, it's like there's some really serious stuff, you know, because you and I have both dealt with, you know, some really challenging times and some trauma and whatever. And so I'm, you know, these days really passionate about speaking up about, you know, abuse and the different forms of abuse and, you know, and like you say, whether that's bullying and toxicity in the workplace, you know, or like you say, gaslighting can appear there as well, or whether it's in somebody's personal life, because like you say, our whole selves turn up. So it's why I'm really passionate about openly talking about those challenges that I've had, because if that helps somebody who's maybe going through it or thinks that they might be, you know, to have the courage to speak up. But it took a long time for that to heal. It took a really long time. And I think sometimes you do just have to be incredibly kind to yourself, because it is trauma. You know, whether it's trauma with a big T or trauma with a little T, you know, trauma is trauma. And, you know, it's your trauma, and it's, you know, you don't always have to see it relative to somebody else's, like, oh, there's, you know, greater trouble in the world than mine or whatever. But we shouldn't actually underestimate that our trauma is our trauma. But I think, you know, for me, it took time. And actually the number one thing, actually more than anything else, when it had happened to me, was allowing myself to know that it had happened, to actually give myself permission to go, I have been abused, because there was so much denial, like when it was going on. But also you kind of think, well, like abuse isn't something that happens to people like me, or abuse doesn't happen into like my kind of households, or, you know, it's, you know, other people are suffering abuse and it's kind of far worse, and, you know, yeah. And you minimize it all, and you doubt all the time. And I've said this on, you know, numerous occasions when I've you know, like in writing, like you say, or when I've talked to people, and go, first and foremost, you have to go, it's okay for me to come out and say, I was abused, this was abuse, and to acknowledge it for what it's for, what it was. And I think it's only when you do that, then can you start the steps of going, okay, this was abuse, right? Okay, now what are the steps in the journey that I need to go through for me personally to heal from this? And you know, and it's that, and it's like I said, it's why I get out there and I talk about it, because I want it to become okay for women, well, for anybody, but obviously, you know, the Boardroom is all about women, to go, this is what happened to me. I suffered abuse at work, at home, you know, wherever it was, and make it okay, rather than us being silent. Because you know what, when we are silent about that kind of stuff, nothing changes. Whereas the more we speak up and the more we talk about abuse that's going on in its different forms, whether that's physical, emotional, psychological, then we can start having an open dialogue about how frequently it happens and when and where people can get support and help.
Yeah, that's such an important point. Whether that's been happening in your personal life, but also at work. The experiences that we have shape us, don't they? They shape us. And again, coming back to the, am I reacting or responding in that situation? All of those experiences, and some of them, like you were saying before, you know, it could be a big T, a massive kind of life-changing event, but it could actually just be say just, it's an accumulation of little T's over the years as well, that dictates what we think of ourselves. Maybe that we dumb ourselves down, like the protection strategies, I think. So for some of us, that is remaining silent. And for some of that us, that is that emotional reaction that we wish we didn't have, that we could calm. But I think it's about being, I mean, you talk about A for ask, in ask questions in the guide. And I think there are kind of two sides of that, is asking yourself questions.
Yes.
Isn't it? Asking yourself questions, where might this be coming from? Even if you don't know, it doesn't matter, but it's just that. Or accepting as well. I'm a human being, and this is how human beings take this stuff on, you know, and it's different for everybody. But also you talk about asking questions in a different context, don't you, as well?
Yeah, I do, because I think that sometimes if we feel like we haven't got the courage to kind of come straight out and say something for somebody, like we were talking about it in a work context, weren't we, around, you know, with when somebody's stolen your idea or on and those kind of things. But actually, by interrogating something, by asking questions, or, you know, using questions to help shift a perspective about something, because again, I don't know about you, but I think a lot of the organizations or the teams I worked in, lots of groupthink, you know, lots of yes, we all agree with that, don't we? And you're thinking, no, I don't. You know, actually, some of this is making me feel quite uncomfortable or whatever. But actually, being curious, seeking to understand, showing an interest in somebody, you know, they don't find that offensive. You know, and it's a way to kind of challenge and shift that perspective by asking questions. So rather than kind of lecturing and going, I don't think that's right, blah, 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 for these reasons, but actually showing some intellectual inquiry and asking questions is a much less threatening way of getting people to think differently, showing a different perspective. And also, you know, asking questions, you know, is a great way to show your intelligence. So, you know, it's a good way of cheerleading yourself without going, I'm really smart because, but actually, if you get a reputation for asking really good, searching quality questions that help people to see things differently or make a better decision, then actually that's a really good place to be in the workplace.
Yeah. And I think open questions particularly are really good for that, aren't they? So where you can't say yes or no to something, or where it's not a kind of loaded question around something, yeah. You know, yeah. Where you're trying to direct the answer into your kind of, you know, and again, this is something I think it'd be great if we got taught more of this stuff when we were younger, you know, how do we do this curious questioning? Because it just opens people's minds up, the curiosity, and like you say, feels less of a threat to other people. So therefore, we're not prodding their Frankenstein brain. So that's the other thing to think about, that, you know, it's really interesting. Now, because I know a lot about this now, just knowing how your Frankenstein brains work, and you get to spot that in other people. And so you see it play out, and it's actually quite amusing sometimes, where you can think, oh, they're just in their Frankenstein brain at the moment, that, you know, and you can just watch it, and even that alone. But what, when, how, who, where? I always try not to ask the question why, because why, I think, can make people feel defensive, and then that triggers their Frankenstein brain again. What's the purpose of us trying to do this? You know, what outcome are we looking for if we do it this way? What would, you know, being able to do that, actually, you help clarify people thinking as well, where they start to change their own view and can then kind of say, oh yeah, I get your point now.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, thinking about those questions, like you say, you know, we don't all have to be amazing and think of those questions off the top of our heads on the spot, you know, particularly when you're in a meeting and it might be, you know, fast paced, high pressure, lots going on, you know, other distractions. You don't have to come up with these amazing questions like on the spot and put yourself under that pressure. you know, a well-worded question can be thought about. You know, you can almost have a list of them, you know, before you go into the meeting. And yes, you might have to tweak the question so that you make it relevant to that particular, you know, discussion or project or whatever it is. But the how to frame the question, the front part of the question, you can give that some thought beforehand and think, well, what's the best way? If I'm curious about this or want to check somebody's reasoning, whatever, how do I load the front of that question and have that planned in advance? And then, like I said, sort of tack on the, you know, for this particular project bit. So again, there is, you know, pre-prepared stuff that you can do. And I think once you've done a bit of that, those questions will just come to mind and trip off the tongue much more easily with a bit of practice. But you're right. It isn't about going, so do you think that's a really good idea? No, it's not those kind of questions.
Would you do that? You know,
Oh, and how do you think that's going to work? You know, it's all in the delivery. But yeah, thinking about those questions up front and thinking about what are those searching questions that you can ask to make sure you bring another perspective or get your point of view across or get people to really think. And again, you know, curiosity is a really attractive quality. You know, I don't mean in a sexy, attractive kind of way, although it's kind of a bit of that. But, you know, being curious, you know, people kind of like it when you show an interest, when you show a sort of agile mind and that kind of curiosity, people kind of tend to warm to it and like it. So again, it's much less threatening than having to kind of make a statement about why you think something in particular.
And here's what's also amazing about curiosity, that Einstein genius brain we're trying to tap into loves curiosity. That's how you shift resources out of being in Frankenstein mode into Einstein mode, the front of the brain, novelty, curiosity, and humor. So you can kind of break some of the tension with a little bit of that, and you can bring everybody back into their Einstein brain yourself. And I think what I heard you say also, actually, which reminded me, when you were talking about you can prepare questions, actually, you can prepare yourself to speak up. Mm. So whether that is, because here's what happens, I think, in a work context or any emotional context, maybe that's in a relationship or something where you feel like maybe I want to tackle something and not say it because I feel like I'm treading on eggshells, then prepare yourself for those things. So what do I mean by that? Lots of different ways. I always ask myself the question, so again, curiosity, what's the outcome I would like to achieve from this meeting? What might be the one point that I'd like to get my voice heard on? How do I want to behave in that meeting? And what do I need to do to prepare myself? So some of those things might be around, you know, preparing content for that or thinking of those questions, but a lot of it is preparing my mental state and my physical state for that. Because how many times these days, you know, we're just in a cycle of meeting attendance from one meeting to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And you've not had that time to make a shift in your brain. So you've been doing one thing that you're concentrating on, then you're straight into the next meeting. And that front part of your brain, Einstein, is really tired. So just preparing yourself, whether that's a meeting or a conversation that you're going to have where you want to speak up, take at least 15 minutes to physically disengage from the previous meeting, to prepare your mental state for that. How do I want to be? How do I want to come across? To take some breaths and to quieten what's going on in there, to engage this, to get curious in the front of your brain. Because you'll be amazing if you just do that little bit of preparation. How you'll feel, your confidence will be better. You'll have clarity around what you want to tackle and how you want to go about it. And how, you know, if my intention is I'm preparing to be calm in that meeting, how am I going to stay calm in that meeting when I know that it's probably going to kick off at some point? What will I do in those moments? So you're constantly creating yourself a strategy, a little strategy for dealing with that. And we just don't look at this. If anyone's watching on YouTube at the moment, you will see that I'm pulling the most ridiculous face, but we constantly don't. We just kind of navigate through situations and life without having a strategy for things, you know, without thinking about what are my boundaries in this situation? How do I want to show up? If this were to happen, I like the if and when's, if this were to happen, then I'll do this. And when we've got those sort of strategies and techniques, that really helps us in those moments where we know that perhaps we're going to get emotional. So, okay, I know I'm getting emotional. I can feel it. This is my go-to technique in that meeting. I'm just going to take some breaths and calm down, and I'm not going to react. I'm going to respond because I'm going to now ask this question calmly.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. And I think, you know, that it is that bit that, you know, we talk so many times, don't we? Because I know it's, you know, one of your favorites and your expertise is about that breath work in order to calm that down. And I talk about that in this particular guide. But it is that thing of actually calming that breathing down, because I think it is that thing of preparing to speak as well. You know, I find that in myself, is that you kind of keep taking those like short breaths in, and you get more and more, you know, uptight as you're sort of waiting to say something. Is that actually is that thing of you know, exhaling first, you know, making sure you empty your lungs and you exhale, which then calms down your entire system, and then you can take that breath in and let the words come out. And I think, you know, sometimes it's that really, really simple stuff, but like you say, Joe, it's knowing some of that stuff that just in seconds you can, you know, you can switch over to those techniques, and then suddenly out come the words and you're able to speak up.
Yeah, and also I think if you're listening to this and maybe you've got confidence, maybe it's at working meetings and you've got confidence to speak up, but you know that there are colleagues that are really quiet in meetings, then maybe, you know, think about how can you draw them in a way that they get their voice heard, but they're not really, you know, scared about it. And if you're one of those people who is afraid to speak up in meetings, then go to one of the louder characters before the meeting and say, you know, sometimes I find it really difficult to interject because I'm a quiet person. Would you mind helping me? To just make sure that, you know, somebody asks me a question and brings me in. There are loads of things you can do to help yourself, and you'd be amazed that most of the time those other colleagues that you might have may not realize that that's happening because they're in their own little kind of world and space in that moment. And if you actually ask, so, you know, again, another way of asking questions, how can I ask for some help here? You know, go and find that ally that might help bring you into the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as for me, I, you know, I can masquerade as an extrovert, but I'm actually an introvert. So as an introvert, I like that thinking time, you know, that moment to sort of reflect on something. And sometimes in a meeting when it's going really quickly, then the moment can pass. For you. So it is about noticing who are those introverts and helping them to facilitate that opportunity for them to reflect a little bit, think a little bit. And then normally that's when they interject, whereas the extroverts will be thinking out loud and saying it all, and try and notice those. Some really simple stuff you can just notice about who's introverts, who's the extroverts, and then helping those introverts, like you say, by asking them a question. Or if it's you, like you say, going to somebody and saying, look, I've got some points I want to make here on this particular, you know, discussion point or this particular area. It'd be really helpful if you could just help me to find a moment to bring those items out.
Yeah, and also because I know that I've worked with people on this who get really frustrated with themselves because they're a real reflector in their learning style, which means they really need to think about stuff, reflect on it. They'll go away from the meeting and they'll go, oh, I wish I'd have said that in the meeting. It's to not be afraid, I think, to say, have a reflective style. What I'd really like to do is take a little bit of time just to think about this, and I'll come back with some, you know, some of my comments too. And I think people, you know, group dynamics, I think, are really interesting in the workplace and around whether you feel you can speak up and, you know, that kind of thing. Understanding that we've all got different communication preferences, personality styles, actually goes a really long way to helping those of us. Like you say, often it will be the extroverts or the fast-paced people, the dominant people who will dominate conversations and speak their ideas out loud, even though they've not been thought through, whilst maybe the reflectors and the quieter, the, you know, the more logical thinkers, the more, I don't know, sometimes the more people type people don't get that opportunity to get heard. So, again, we do more of this inside the boardroom. It's been an ace conversation, I think.
It has. There's so many places it can go. Like you say, that you know, there's stuff that we follow up, you know, when we have live events as well. So, you know, we can continue that conversation. But no doubt, you know, some of the themes from here will come back around again. But so far, I think we've spoken up, Jo. It's probably now time for us to be silent. I am woman. I am me. I am enough.
You've been listening to the Broadroom podcast. If you're our kind of broad and you'd like to take a seat in the Broadroom, download our free guide full of tips. You'll find it in the show notes.